This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Of mine while I was on holiday a couple of months ago, and my daughter was in the car, and she heard me start off the shiur welcoming Rabbi Bernard, and she listened very quietly right through the whole thing. At the end she says, "Is it finished?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Was Rabbi Bernard there?" I said, "Yes, he was." She said, "That wasn't very nice of you. You spoke and didn't let him say a word." So once again, if I can if I can welcome Rabbi Bernard again, and very happy and honored to have him with us, and hope it will be we'll have him with us certainly over Shabbos and more frequently. You have to negotiate with your balabatim. I told you last week we started on the under the very first words in Sefer Vayikra, which brought us onto the whole discussion. Daberu b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleim, speak to the children of Israel, and you shall say to them, Odom ki yakriv mikem korban la'ashem, if a human being, if a man brings from among you a korban to the Ribbono shel Olam, min ha'behemo, min ha'bokor, min ha'tzoyim takrivu es korbanchem, you shall bring the sacrifice from cattle, sheep, and so on, you shall bring your sacrifice. We talked on that. The Rashi we brought, Mo Odom Arishin Loi Hikriv Min HaGezel Shakol Hoyo Sheloi Af Atem Loi Takrivu Min HaGezel. Why does the Torah use the word Odom rather than Ish? Uses Odom to refer back to Odom HaRishon, to the first man, in the same way that the first man, when he brought a sacrifice, it wasn't stolen because everything belonged to him. So if you bring a sacrifice, it must be yours. And we talked about what was unique about Odom HaRishon. Odom HaRishon wasn't the only one who didn't bring sacrifices min HaGezel. If Avraham Avinu brought a sacrifice, he also didn't steal it. It wasn't only Odom who didn't steal. There was something unique and special about the fact that Odom HaRishon was incapable of stealing. That the situation just didn't allow theft. And we asked on that too, and we said it's not such a kunst to be honest when you can't steal because everything belongs to you. That's not worth as much praise as when you can steal and you don't. We talked about Geneva last week, the different types of Geneva, and what changed when other people, apart from Odom HaRishon, were introduced into the world. We also talked about that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, where we warn any witness who might be, we worry, might have intentions of giving false evidence in a capital case. And one of the ways that we build him up, as we say, that Lefichach Nivra Ha'adam Yechidi, you must know you're as important as the whole world and it's not worth your while making any trouble, and so on. We talked about what was special about the outlook, the philosophy of life that one must have been able to develop if one were an Odom HaRishon. What was peculiar and unique, and somehow the Torah wants to perpetuate that philosophy. Because Lefichach Nivra Ha'adam Yechidi, therefore man was created singular, on his own, so every one of us should look at the world that way and say Bishvili Nivra Olam. So there was a certain philosophy, a certain outlook, a certain emotion which only Odom HaRishon could feel. Was at that moment that he alone looked at the whole world and was all his, and somehow that emotion has to be perpetrated throughout the generations, and we must today also have something of that feeling. And we were just examining what it was exactly that Odom HaRishon had that got spoiled the moment other people came into the world. And last week we spoke about Geneva, and I told you that this week we would speak about Kina, about jealousy, which was one of the problems we already saw in the sacrifices of Cain and Hevel, where we brought one view that Hevel was criticized in that his motivation for bringing his sacrifice was jealousy, of almost the sort of jealousy that Cain had brought his. It was only after Cain brought his sacrifice, the Hevel Gamhu, that as a sort of an afterthought we're told, and Hevel also brought one having seen that his brother brought one, and that he was criticized for that, which again didn't happen with Odom HaRishon. Odom HaRishon did nothing for the sake of impressing anybody, because there was nobody to impress. And what I want to do is, it's an easy show, I just want to look at kina. I want to look at one aspect really of kina, of jealousy. I want to look at what is jealousy, what is kina. I want to look at what brings kina about. And I want to look at what avoids, how does one avoid kina. Those are the three things. That kina is one of the most difficult middos to avoid is clear. And it's clear from a tefillah which many sidurim have at the end of the Shmona Esra, where we mispalel that Shaloi Taile Kinas Odom Alai Veloi Kinosi Al Acherim, that I shouldn't be jealous of others and others shouldn't be jealous of me. And it's always been an amazing thing to me that it's exactly that that we mispalel. Why don't we just pray that I shouldn't get angry with others and others shouldn't get angry with me? Why don't we pray that I shouldn't steal from others and others shouldn't steal from me? The one thing that we mispalel for is kina, jealousy. That I shouldn't get jealous and that others shouldn't get jealous of me. I've always said that that is one of the most unavoidable of all midas, is the midah of jealousy. The Orchus Chaim, in his chapter on kina, goes further and he says nobody gets away from it. The whole world is based on jealousy. Competition is jealousy. And everything that one does, the whole world operates on the basis of competition. A competitive spirit is responsible for a great deal of what gets done in the world. And therefore, kina, jealousy, is a primary element in the world. People are created that way, that's the way they operate, and in everything they do, there is a little bit of kina, there is a little bit of jealousy. We're so dependent and so affected by the way people look at us, and by what other people are doing, that it's impossible to escape from kina altogether. What is kina? The Orchus Chaim defines it as, the Orchus Tzaddikim defines it as wanting that which others have got. That's kina. Wanting it because somebody else has got it. That's what begins to make it attractive. And he develops his whole theory. He has a certain style, Orchus Tzaddikim, where he talks about the negative side of Amida, and then he talks about the positive side, that kina can be used constructively as well. And so he develops it. Be that as it may, that's his definition. Wanting something else because somebody else has got it. Somehow I'm going to show you a chazal that takes the definition of kina, I think, a step further than that even. Kina is wanting something for no other reason than that somebody else has got it. You see no merit in it whatever. It's only because somebody else has got it that you want it to. That's really kina. Why do I stress this so critically? Because according to the definition of the Orchus Tzaddikim, I want it because he's got it. So what do I do about that? I try and get it also. I also want it, so I get it. And I'm unsettled until I get it. According to the definition that I've taken it one step further, I don't need to get it. If I can get it away from him, it's also good. That's also sufficient. All I want is that he shouldn't have it, or that he shouldn't have it without my having it. There are two ways of achieving that. Either I can also get that, and if I'm unable to get that, it would be sufficient to quell my jealousy if I can get it away from him some other way, even if I don't get it. Where do we see that? From a very famous Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peches, Daf Peches, talks about when Moshe Rabbeinu came up to heaven to receive the Torah, the angels started getting angry with Ribbono Shel Olam, and they said, what is this human being doing up here? Are you going to give this Torah which you've kept so long, even before any human being was thought of, you've kept this Torah up here, now all of a sudden you're giving it down to these people? And the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, answer them, give them an answer. Moshe Rabbeinu says he's scared, and the Ribbono Shel Olam says, don't worry, you hold on to my throne and give them an answer, you tell them. And he starts arguing with him, and he starts putting a case to the Melochim, to the angels, as to why the Torah rightfully belongs down on earth and not in Shemayim. Its place is down here. And he shows them how that which the Torah deals with, the concepts of the Torah, the halachas of the Torah, are all things which can only be kept down here. They have no application up there without this world. And one of the things he says is the following. Shuv ma'aksiv. And again he goes on and on right through the Torah, quoting from examples as to what's written in the Torah. Shuv ma'aksiv bo. And another thing, what's written in it? Lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov. Three examples he gives from the Ten Commandments. It says in the Torah, you shall not murder. It says in the Torah, you shall not commit adultery. It says in the Torah, you shall not steal. Hina yesh b'neichem. Is there jealousy among you? Yetzahara yesh b'neichem. Is there yetzahara among you? What do we see here? For lo tinaf, you shall not commit adultery. That's the yetzahara. He says, committing adultery doesn't apply to you angels because you don't have a yetzahara. You don't have a taiva for these things. What is the loy? What is the kino going for? The jealousy. He has mentioned three things: loy tirtzach, loy tinaf, and loy tigna. You mustn't murder. You mustn't commit adultery, and you mustn't steal. So the yetzahara goes off for tinaf, for not committing adultery. Kino says Rashi. Kino yesh b'neichem sha'atem boim al yodo lidei ritzicho. Is there jealousy among you that you might come to murder? Says Rashi, kino goes only on ritzicha. Yetzahara goes both on lo tinaf and on lo tignaf. When you steal something from another person, that's not because you're jealous. That's because you've got a yetzahara for it. You want it. And it's from here that I want to take this definition a lot further than the Yochas Tzadikim has taken it, in a sense. That to want that which somebody else has got is not yet jealousy. That's another yetzahara. You want something, you've got a taiva for something. And maybe the fact that he's got it makes you want it even more. The fact that it's inaccessible makes you want it even more. Mayim genuvim yimtaku. Something which needs to be stolen, something in front of which there is a barrier, is even more attractive to you than if it wouldn't be. It can be such a thing. But that's not yet kino. Kino is when you don't want what he's got. You just don't want him to have it. And therefore you'll even murder him. If you can't take it away from him, you'll take him away from it. It's also good. We'll also satisfy your jealousy. So that we see that the basic emotion that leads to murder is not anger, it's not chaos, and it's not all the normal things that people think. The basic one is kino. It's plain and simple jealousy. Often what the psychologists wonder, and people generally wonder, what brings a man to murder? How sick do you have to be to kill another human being? The answer is, you don't have to be that sick. If your jealousy is burning strongly enough, it can lead to murder. Kino is something which leads to murder. Kino yesh b'neichem she'atem boim al yodo lidei ritzicho. That's Moshe's argument to the angels. Do you know what it is to be jealous that you should be warned, don't kill? In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, we down there know what it is. We need the isur of loy tirtzach because we're capable of jealousy. And without loy tirtzach, without the prohibition of murder, our jealousy could lead us to murder. That's the connection. There's a pasuk in Koheles which states, I'll find it quickly, which also states at various perushim on the pasuk, but also very succinctly explains Shlomo HaMelech's view of kino in chapter Dalet, verse Dalet. V'ro'iti ani eskol omol ve'eskol kishrun ha'maiseh. Let's just translate it on the most superficial sense. And I've seen, says Shlomo HaMelech, all the work and all the effects of actions, all the things which are done in the world. Kihi kinas ish me'ra'eyu. At the end of the day, it's just one man being jealous of another man. Gamze hevel uru'us ruach. This is also nonsensical, it's nothingness, and it's in fact badness of attitude, badness of spirit. So Shlomo HaMelech again brings everything down to jealousy, and he writes it off. I think everything is motivated by jealousy, and since everything is motivated by jealousy, it has no value. Rashi goes even further in it. V'ro'isi ani eskol omol hena aveiro she'en omol b'enei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I see all the omol, all the work, he says it's not the work, the omol means the aveiros. The Matudis also explained that way. And kishre and amaisa comes from the word kosher. But she'enu l'shem shamayim elo l'kinas ish mirei'ehu. So let's translate the pasuk according to Rashi. V'ro'isi ani eskol omol, and I've seen all the wrongdoing. Ve'is kol kishre in amayaseh, and all the right doing, all the mitzvahs in the world. And at the end of it, kihi kinas ish mirei'ehu, it's all motivated by jealousy. Gamzeh hevel u'srach. That's also nothingness and bad spirit. The conflicting gemoras, Tosfos deals with it in several places in Shas. In Pesachim, in Daf Nun, there's a Gemara that says that a person should do Torah and mitzvah shelo lishma, shemitach shelo lishma, bo lishma. Even if you're doing Torah and mitzvah for the wrong reasons, or not for the right reasons, you should do it nevertheless, because it will bring you to do it for the right reasons ultimately. Better to do it than not to do it at all. And Tosfos asks from a Gemara in Brachos that says that a person would be better off never having been created than to do things shelo lishma. Tosfos, what's going on? answers Tosfos, the one is where you're doing a Shelo Lishma, you're doing it for other calculations. The Gemara in Brochus, which says that you would be better off not having been created, is where you're doing it Al Manas Lekante. You're doing it to be for one-upmanship. You want to be one better than the guy next to you. So let's look at it clearly and see what's the big difference. If I want to learn Torah not because I'm going to, I want to learn Torah, but I want to learn Torah because of the honor it will bring me. That's called Shelo Lishmo, and it's better I should do it Shelo Lishmo than not do it at all, because maybe I'll come that way to do it Lishmo. I'll come to do it for the right reason ultimately. If, however, I'm doing it not because I want the honor, but just to get one up on somebody else, there I would be better never having been created. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta says, you might remember, by the way, that doesn't mean that you don't have to do it. You still have to do it. You've got yourself in a real mess. There's still no heter not to learn. You still got to learn, even if you're doing it lekanter, that you would have been better off never having been born than learning that way. So you're just in a mess where your learning is going to make you a worse human being, and there's just nothing you can do about it unless you change yourself and change your motivation. Be that as it may, that's a completely different thing. Why not? Why is it so different? At least the first way, I'm learning for the wrong reasons. That means I don't value learning. Learning is not important, except in that it is a means to another end which is important to me. The cover, the honor is important to me. So at least that's something real. At least I'm learning because I want something for myself. It happens to be the wrong thing, and it's twisted and it's distorted and all the rest of it. But the fact is, I'm learning for something real that I want. It's real in the sense it's really me. That means I'm a person who's rode fachar, I covered, I want honor, and this is what I want to do, and I'm doing it, and I go ahead. When it's al manat lekante, when all that I want to do is I want to be one up on somebody else who's sitting in the base of Medrash, I want to be one better than him, what would happen if chas v'sholom that other person dropped dead? But I wouldn't have to learn. My whole reason for learning is gone. So the reason is totally external when it's al manas lekante. There's nothing in me that wants me to do it. Nothing at all. It's totally dependent on somebody else. When it's shelo lishmo, it's I who want to learn, but I want to learn for the wrong reasons. That's a good deal better than when it's not even I who want to learn at all. I would be quite happy if the other guy was done in. If the other one became ignorant overnight, just imagine such a situation. That would suit me as well as me learning. If he became ignorant, I wouldn't have to learn. And that's the essence of the kina as it's described by Shlomo HaMelech. Whether it's aveiros or mitzvahs, you're doing a mitzvah just because of kina, just because you're jealous of somebody else who looks more frum than you do, so you act still more frum so that you should look frumer than he does. There's nothing internal and real at all. It's all external, it's all outside of you, it's all motivated by him. It's not motivated by you at all. That's kino. Kino is an action which is done with no internal motivation at all, and it's different from shelo lishma. Shelo lishma is an action which is done by yourself for yourself, but for the wrong reason. Kino is an action which is done by yourself for somebody else. You have no interest in the action whatever, and you see no value in the action whatever. You merely want to achieve something that has nothing to do with the action altogether, and which could be achieved as well by murdering the other person. And the real ultimate expression of kino is ritzicha. The ultimate expression of jealousy is murder. Just if you can find a way to manage it without murdering, we'll do it, because murdering is not a thing that one does very easily. But ultimately, one could do just as well by murdering the other person. There's a Rashi in Breishis, which in fact is in a bit of a contradiction to the Gemara we just did. When the Ribbono Shel Olam says, in the first chapter, Vayomer Elokim, and God said, Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu, let us make a man in our form and our image. V'yudi bidgas hayom, and he will rule over the fish of the sea, v'oif ha-shamayim, and the birds of the heaven, v'abahimo v'chol oretz v'chol haremes haremes al-oretz. He will rule over the land. The Mephoshim have difficulty with the word Na'aseh, which is first person plural. Who's we? What are we going to make? Who's the we? Who else is there up there? Says Rashi, An v'tanitor shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu lemadnu mikan. We learn from here the modesty of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Lefi sheho odom bidmus hamalochim. Since man was created in the image of the angels, there's a certain similarity between the human being and the angel. His spiritual abilities, his intellectual abilities, his ability to think, as Rashi says further down. Vayiskan ubori, and they will be jealous of him. Okay, so let's just stop there for a moment. So number one, we see that the angels are capable of jealousy. And the Rabbi Kiveger asks the question, and many people deal with the answers, which we won't go into. The angels are capable of certain jealousies, which is an amazing statement of the midah of jealousy. Because I don't know if there's any other midah which the angels are capable of feeling. And then I've never seen anyone, any other midah described to angels that they could really feel some other kind of emotion other than kinah. That even the angels, and even though Moshe Rabbeinu said to the angels, is there any kinah among you? The answer is yes, in a sense there is, on that particular one. It's something so inherent in the Bria, something so inherent in the creation, that, which again explains why it's so almost unavoidable. So the first thing we see is that the angels are capable of a degree of kinah, in some form or another. The second thing is, just look at the Rashi carefully. What brings about the kinah? Lefi sheha adam bidmus hamelachi, because man was created similar in appearance, similar in style to the melachim, to the angels. One of the things that is responsible for the feeling of kinah is similarity. One isn't jealous of somebody who is very different. Doctors aren't jealous of engineers, and engineers aren't jealous of architects, and architects aren't jealous of street cleaners, and street cleaners aren't jealous of teachers. There's no professional jealousy in those areas. One doctor is jealous of another, and one teacher is jealous of another. Within the profession are the professional jealousies. Human beings aren't jealous of animals, and animals aren't jealous of human beings. They each do their own thing, they each go their own way, there's no jealousy there. The closer people come together, the more similar they are in their strivings, in their ambitions, in their makeups, the more susceptible they are to jealousy. The Ribbono Shel'olam foresaw the possibility of jealousy among the malachim lefi she'adam bidmus hamalachim, because man was being created in the image, in a similar sort of image to the malachim. There he saw the possibility of the yiskanu boy, that they're going to be jealous of him. This is the second yesod. The first yesod was that jealousy is wanting the other person not to have. The second is that it occurs when two people are similar to one another, not when they're very different. Which gives us still a little bit more of an understanding of what kinah is. Kinah now becomes when a person's uniqueness is being threatened. As long as I feel different to the other person, he can have whatever he wants, it doesn't bother me. But when I feel that my uniqueness is being threatened, when the Ribbono Shel Olam saw that the creation of man might create a feeling of being threatened among the angels, that now the angels are not the biggest chap anymore in the world, there's a human being also that's not far off, that's when the danger of kinah started becoming real. That's when the danger of jealousy started becoming real. And here I want to move to the very famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where three things are mentioned and they're all very closely connected. Rabbi Eliezer, HaKaparamer, HaKino, VaHataivo, VaHakovod, Mitzim, Esodom, Min Oilon. Jealousy, Taivo, meaning lust, desire, VaHakovod, and a need for being honored, are the things which are Mitzim, Esodom, Min Oilon. They remove a person from the world, they drive him out of the world. What do these three things have in common? They're three things that a person engages in order to feel special and unique. Almost in order to feel. Full stop. When a person is utilizing himself, when a person is exercising his own talents and abilities, he feels unique. He doesn't feel threatened in the sense of who am I and what am I and in what way am I different to anybody else. When a person is really fulfilling himself and really utilizing himself, he doesn't have that degree of threat at all. When he isn't, these are the three things he goes for. Kinah. Kinah is number one, where he starts imagining that his uniqueness is not in what he is, but in what he has. And therefore, if I find somebody else who has more than I have, then what am I? What value am I? He's got whatever I've got, plus more. Or even if he hasn't got more, even if he's just got as much as I have. Right? The human beings were created bidmus hamalachim, not necessarily greater than the malachim. They were just similar to the malachim, and there was a fear of kinah already. Once he's got the same as I've got, what's special about me? And this feeling that my uniqueness and specialness is being threatened because another person has the same as I have, That's kina, that's jealousy, that's a person thinking that his uniqueness depends on what he's got rather than on what he is. What about taiva? It's the same thing. Taiva is the need for an external stimulus to feel alive. That's what taiva is. You've got to eat something, or you've got to experience something. You've got to have some kind of physical experience externally stimulated. That's what a taiva is. You've got to go to something, you've got to do something outside of yourself in order to fulfill the taiva. Why do you have to do something outside of yourself? Because inside of yourself you feel unfulfilled. Inside of yourself you're not able to feel your uniqueness and you're not able to feel your specialness. Kovod is the same. Kovod is, I need the applaud of the other people. I need them to applaud me. If they don't applaud me, I don't feel recognized. So what if I don't feel recognized? If I feel that what I'm doing is important, what does it matter if I'm recognized or if I'm not? The answer is, I don't feel that what I'm doing is important. If they'll applaud me, then I know it's important. If they don't, I don't feel within me that it's important. Do you begin to see the similarity in style in all these three things? They're all situations where you've got to look outside of yourself and get something from outside of yourself in order to feel that you are worthwhile. A taiva is a feeling that I'm empty, I've got nothing, I'm not alive, I need to experience something in order to feel alive. I need other people to applaud me in order to feel alive. I need to have what he's got in order to feel alive and in order to feel unique. And that's mitziyim es ha'adam min ha'olam. That removes a person completely from the world. I want to make a suggestion which I have no proofs for. It's just a thought. The lotion used is mitziyim es ha'adam min ha'olam. They remove a person from the world. In the beginning of Pirkei Avos, we're told al shloisha dvarim ha'olam ha'imei. Also three things. The same world out of which one is driven with these three middos, kino, taiva, and kovod, that same world stands on three other principles. Al ha-Torah, on Torah, al ha-Avodah, which is really the temple service, al gemilus chasodim, and on fine interpersonal relationships. So I try to examine the possibility that there's some kind of linkage. And I think there is. Torah to start off with. The Gemara says in Poga Becho Menuvel Zeh Moshchei Lebeis HaMedrash, if the Taiva gets hold of you, if a Yetzirah gets hold of you, the way to cope with it is to go to the Beis HaMedrash. You sit down and learn. The Gemara we've spoken about before and we've explained a little bit before, but the meaning being there basically and very briefly is, again, if a Taiva is a need to feel an external stimulus in order to feel alive, it's not necessary to do it that way. Go to the Beis HaMedrash, and really many of the Mefoshim and the Bali Musa say it doesn't just mean go and learn, but go and learn the very subject for which you have a taiva. So if one has a taiva, you want to eat something which is treif. So go to the Beis HaMedrash and learn about the halachas of treif, open a Yoredeya and go through a little bit some of the Gemaras in Chulin and some Tur with Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch, and really delve into the concept and see the concept fully. All of a sudden you find yourself fulfilling yourself, you feel alive, you feel real, and the need for an external stimulus is not so great anymore, if it exists at all. You feel alive, you feel unique in the very area in which you had a taiva, except you're doing it internally. You're doing it by taking something internally, you're doing it by conceptualizing rather than by going out and having a physical experience, which is not allowed in that particular circumstance. And so with any taiva that you've got, you want to talk a bit of Lashon Hara. So before you talk Lashon Hara, you sit down for 10 minutes and you open the Chofetz Chaim's halachas of Lashon Hara, and you go through them a little bit and you become interested in it conceptually, and you have a kasha on the words of the Chofetz Chaim and one of his sources, and you look up a chazal that he quotes, he brings a medrash or he brings a gemara, and you get involved, and all of a sudden you're involved in Lashon Hara in a very different way to the way you plan to be involved, but you're feeling alive, you're feeling real, you're creative, you're noticing things which nobody else noticed. You're penetrating an understanding of what it is in a way that nobody else has done. You feel real and you feel alive. So the possibility that Torah ties up to the taiva, that's possible. The taiva, that when you have a taiva, the antithesis of the taiva is Torah. The antithesis of a lust for an experience which is not permitted is to go into the Beis HaMedrash and deal with that experience conceptually, because that is permitted. You're allowed to deal with any experience you want conceptually. There's a whole masechta called Avodah Zarah. A whole masechta that deals with idolatry. you want to involve yourself in the concepts of idolatry, go through the Masechta and go through the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole Masechta that deals with it. There's a whole Masechta, that Masechta itself, that deals with intermarriage and interrelationship between Jew and Gentile. You want to go into that, go into it properly, but do it conceptually. You don't have to take out a non-Jewish girl. You can be Mekayim the whole Taiva by going through Masechta Avodah Zarah also, and you'll find when you're through with it that you don't have such a Taiva to take out a non-Jewish girl necessarily. That's Taiva and Torah. The Alva Avodah. What was the Avodah? The Avodah, most of it was not very glamorous. As I mentioned recently somewhere else, the Avodah was cleaning the floors in the Beis HaMedrash, in the Beis HaMikdash, shechting the animals, sprinkling blood, cleaning the Mizbeach up, making fires, cleaning fires. You know, it's the kind of work that in this country no white person does. And that was done by the Kohanim. That was the highest level of status, of social status in Israel. Because it was done in the Beis HaMikdash for the Ribbono Shel Olam. But anybody who had a taiva for kovod, anybody who had a need for kovod, what greater exercise could there have been than avodah in the Beis HaMikdash? Go and sweep the floors a little bit and feel, why is it good? You have to, the only way that you can survive such an occupation with self-respect is to believe that what you're doing is important, even though nobody is going to clap their hands. Well, I said, you know, what's the difference between a queen and a servant? And the queen works as hard as a servant. She works the same kind of long hours as a servant. She has many of the same problems as a servant. The only difference is that when she goes out, everybody waves at her and stands with flags, and she feels gratitude. And when the servant finishes her day, she puts away her broom and her pail, and she walks out of the house, and there's nobody there to say thank you and to wave. And that's really the only difference. Everybody works. What makes one type of work more glamorous than another is really the degree of gratitude that one gets for it. The need for gratitude in your work is when you don't find your work sufficiently important in itself. Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, there was no gratitude for. It had to be done. It was work which had to be done. And it was done with pride because of its importance, because it was seen as so holy and so critical and so important in the whole life of Klal Yisrael. That's what made it glamorous, not the fact that people applauded you. Nobody applauded you. It was the most unglamorous action, which to the people who did it was the most glamorous thing possible. What better exercise is there to get rid of any need for kovod than that? And one doesn't have to be a kohen in a Beis HaMikdash. One can clean up in one's own Beis HaMedrash, and one can do the little things that nobody knows that anybody is doing, just picking up a tissue off the floor and throwing it where it belongs, and putting some sforim away, cleaning up the garden, anything in a Beis HaMedrash, in one's own home, in somebody else's home. It makes no difference where or what. But to do something which is very ordinary, in as much as the action is concerned, but is very important in the purpose of the action, that's the best antithesis for any need for kovod. You learn to find fulfillment in what you're doing rather than in the way people see what you're doing. That's the best exercise for kovod. It would come out then that the exercise against kinah is gemilus chasodim. But if you suffer from jealousy, the thing to do is gemilus chasodim. One should then go and one should involve oneself in kindness. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? Let's look at the Rashi again. Before we do the Rashi, one little Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Kufay Amud Beis, Omar Rabbi Yosi Bar Choni, Bechol Odom Miskane, Chutz Bibnoi Vesalmidoi. One is capable of feeling jealousy of anybody. In other words, anybody is a potential object of one's jealousy, with two exceptions: one's children and one's talmidim. They're not. Why not? I think for a very simple reason. What did we say was the principle of jealousy? The principle of jealousy was a need to feel unique and special. And to feel that specialist, if one feels that being special and unique in terms of what one has, and now somebody else seems to have what you have, one feels less unique. No more is one unique. No more is one special. I used to be special because I was the only one in my street who had a Rolls Royce. Now every Tom, Dick and Harry is driving a Rolls Royce. What's my function in life? And that's one of the crises that a lot of people go through, where they devote themselves to what they believe is very special and unique. And then when they get into their mid-30s and early 40s, they find that there are a whole lot of other people who did the same and followed the same route and are at least as successful, if not a lot more than they are. So who am I? What have I done? What is it with one's children? So your child is going to have more than you've got. So what? It doesn't bother you. Your child is a creation of yours. You created your child. Is it ever going to enter your mind that I'm losing my uniqueness because my child has got what I've got? But I made him. He is what he is because of my uniqueness. Nobody else could have made that particular child. That's the product of our marriage. That's the product of our love. It's these particular two people who made that particular child. It's not shyest to be jealous of a person who is in fact the very expression of your uniqueness. What greater expression of uniqueness is there than in a particular child you've been able to produce both genetically and in terms of upbringing? Nobody else can produce the same child twice. Even within one family you can't produce two children twice. The very anything that that child acquires and anything which that child achieves is in fact a further and further and further expression of the parent's uniqueness and specialness. What's that to get jealous about? It's not possible. And likewise with the Talmud. Everything that Talmud becomes is something which it is one's own unique teaching which has made that Talmud exactly what he is. So what's Chayach to get jealous of the Talmud? It's just not possible, it's not conceivable. The more he develops and the greater he becomes, the more unique the teacher feels. And the more special and successful the teacher feels. So in those two relationships you can't have kima. Not where there's a child and not where there's a Talmud. What did the Rabbeinu Shlalem do? Because man was about to be created in the image of the Melochim, the sameness, the similarity, and he was afraid now that because of that similarity they were going to start becoming jealous in the feeling that they have lost their uniqueness and their specialness. It's no chap anymore to be an angel if you can be a human being so easily. Therefore nimlach bohem, he said to them out of courtesy, not because he needed their permission, what do you think, angels, about creating a human being? He gave them the opportunity to participate in the act of creation. They are yours also, those human beings. We made them together, so to say. Remember, we discussed it before I made them and you felt it was a good idea too. You put the human being into the category of the Malach's children or Talmidim. The Malach was responsible for the creation of the human being. Now what is a chayach for the malach to start feeling, for the angel to start feeling jealous of the human being? The most that the human being has, and even if he approximates the angel, it doesn't matter because that angel participated in the creation of that human being. That's why, says Rashi, and the tanutosha HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'madnu mikan. We see the modesty of the Ribbono Shel Olam. To make the angel feel like a partner, although he's not that at all, just so that the angel should feel that he's also a bit of a parent of the human being which is about to be created, that he has an interest in the human being, and that kina will not apply at all. If that's the case, then it's possible that our comparison with these two mishnas is accurate. What does gemilus chasodim do? To do gemilus chasodim to a person, if you do a kindness to another person, you're contributing to what that person is ultimately. That's what a real chesed is. I'm not talking about a meaningless little thing. And really in chesed nothing is meaningless. I mean, you can just smile at somebody in the morning and say good morning in a nice tone, and that can give him a confidence which can change his life that day. It can make him take decisions which he would otherwise not have had the confidence to take just because he got a really choshev good morning from you that day. And you've changed his life. So in chesed there's nothing. One can never say that any act of chesed is small and irrelevant and unimportant. You never know. Even the smallest little acts of kindness can change that other person's life. And once you've given him that kindness and thereby changed in some way his life, jealousy no longer is a possibility. Now whatever that person has, you are a shutef, you're a partner with the Ribbono Shel Olam in making that person what he is. You contributed to making that person what he is. You participated in the development of that person, even though just in just one little thing, but that one little thing was enough to get him going and to make him what he was. You know, we're complex beings, us human beings, and when you start looking at what makes us do the things we do and what makes us function the way we do, sometimes one traces things back to amazingly small experiences, and very often it's more to the small experiences or to the apparently small experiences than to the very dramatic ones that really influenced us to do certain things and to feel in certain ways. If that's the case, it gives us a whole new attitude to kina and to chesed. That the method of coping with kina, with jealousy, is to do chesed. That's the way to cope with it. It's the prevention and it's the antidote. If you're already affected by kina, it helps. And it tells us something about how to do a chesed. Not just to do a chesed as a dry act, it says one's supposed to do a kindness, so here's a kindness. But to actually feel in doing a chesed that I'm contributing something to this human being. I'm somehow responsible for the future development of the human being because I have given him an experience which is unique, which he could never have had without me. I've given him something that's back to this Bishvili Nivra Olam in Sanhedrin. I've given him something which nobody else could give him. So what he is after this experience is due partly to me in a very unique fashion. And anything which he now achieves, he's achieving on the back of an action in which I participated. And I therefore free myself from all feelings of jealousy if I'm able to develop that kind of attitude towards my interpersonal relationships ultimately. And that was what was unique about Odom HaRishon. Odom HaRishon was the father of all of us. He could look from then, we said that Odom HaRishon, he could see from one end of the world to the other, both in space and in time. He could look right through to us today and further. And he felt of all of us, these are my children. What was unique about Odom HaRishon was he was able to look at the entire world and say, it's all mine. I'm responsible for it all. I'm starting it all off. Whatever will be developed in this world in the future is somehow stems from something that I've done. Everything. And once one has that feeling, kina doesn't apply anymore. That was what was unique about Odom HaRishon in his korbanos. When he brought a korban, it was completely pure. It was completely free of any outside motivation. It was never motivated by somebody else. Because it was never important. That was just a cheshbon, it was a calculation which Odom HaRishon was totally free from. It didn't apply to him at all. He's the father of us all. And that we're meant, and that's how Vayikra opens, Odom ki yakriv. That aspect of Odom HaRishon, each one of us has to try and feel. And l'fichach nivra Odom yichidi sheyoma kolechot vechot, so that every human being will say, Bishvili nivra ha'ilom. The whole world was created for me to act in. And everything I do, no matter how seemingly irrelevant, in some way affects the whole world. That little good morning we spoke about didn't only affect this man. The decision which he took affected others. And the fact that I said good morning to him nicely when he came to the davening means that when he went home in a good mood. And instead of screaming at his wife because breakfast wasn't ready, he went and made breakfast himself and in fact gave it to his wife, which meant that she was in a good mood. And as a result of that, the wife was able to be nice to the kids and not scream at them because they were getting late at school, but be patient with them, which means that the kid was able to perform better. And that day happened to be a day on which the kid wrote an exam, which was rather important. And as a result of doing well in that exam, the kid was able to go to university and to become a very great doctor or scientist or whatever it was, and to discover all sorts of things. And was all because I said good morning to this man who I didn't even know when he walked into shul in the morning. Who knows? And so it is with everything that one does. One just never knows how far an action goes and how far it develops and what chain effect it sets up. And when you look at the world as Bishvili Nivra Ha'ilam, the whole world is created for me to be active in. I haven't just been created to be active in Sydney. I've been created to be active in Johannesburg and in South Africa and in Africa and the whole world. I don't have to fly all over the place to do it. It's possible to be in one place, and by the type of things one does, because they have this kind of quality to them, one is in fact able to be an influence throughout the world and to free oneself totally of any feeling of kin or of any feeling of jealousy.